Man, it's Friday already. Busted Pencils. Fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, me, Dr. Tim Slecker, and oh yes, it's Friday. And of course, he's here, the chairman of the board, Jacob. And Jacob, man, this is your day. This is where you get to kind of, you know, put me and Johnny on the ropes. I don't know if you're kind of going, Johnny. I mean, what do you, it's now we've done this. I'm loving this segment. But I said last week, I get a little nervous because I don't ever know where Jacob's going to hit us. You know, is it going to be a left? Is it going to be a right? Is it going to be, you know, a little bit of the shuffle? I don't know. That's what I'm, Johnny.
Well, Tim, welcome to all of our worlds and a little game we like to call, when is Tim going to drop the Tim bombs? So this is Jacob's less spontaneous Tim bomb. It's his Friday producer's choice time. I look forward to it. I think it's fun to have us on the hot seat. And yeah, as Jacob puts it, it's the best radio show guests on their own show. So I think we're pioneering this. This format, it's going to be super popular. You're going to hear it on all your favorite podcasts within a year. I guarantee it. But, you know, it's Jacob's choice. Without any further ado, let's hear that hot take, Jacob. Anything goes. It's going to be producer's choice.
Ow! You now have two choices.
Chairman of the board, Jacob.
Ow!
Jacob, chairman of the board.
I bet the board is spelled B-O-R-E-D.
We choose to go to the moon.
Life's full of tough choices, isn't it?
You chose poorly.
Tim, I'm gonna take good care of you. What are you getting worried about? I would never ask you a question that I thought could put you in a difficult position.
Well, you know, it's just that I think it's that
warrior.
Johnny, holy crap, you know that for sure, man. Maybe that's it. It's just that a proclivity to always, you know, if I don't know what's coming, man, I create all kinds of scenarios of how bad it's going to be.
You're being a worrywart.
Exactly. Okay, I'm not going to worry. I'm going to be calm. I'm going to be chilled. I'm going to listen to our friends, you know, Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie at Educators Amplified. I'm going to regulate right now. I'm going to regulate and I'm going to get ready because it's Jacob's choice.
Yeah, I would never ask you a bad question, Tim, because then you guys wouldn't come back on as guests. And that'd be a big problem for me because this show is actually your show. So that'd be a huge problem. The curtain would fall over and I'd be out of a show. So, two awesome guests today. Love these guys. Good looking, handsome, and smart. They make great decisions with programming, I find. Guys, today, the question doesn't come from me. We've got a letter from one of our listeners. I'm going to read it here, and then we're going to go from there. Is that okay with you guys?
All right. Love it.
All right. Dear Busted Pencils, longtime listener, first-time caller. I'm a big fan of the show, but especially of the producer's choice segment. Tim and Johnny put their full knowledge on display best when stimulated by producer Jacob's thought-provoking questions and top-notch humor. I agree with that so far. But I digress. My question is this. On the show, you have talked about Linda McMahon's attempt to suplex the Department of Education, and you've told us how that is a bad thing. But I'm not quite clear on what the Department of Education should be. What do you guys think the department should look like, and what should its role be in education in the United States? P.S. I love you, Jacob. Sincerely, your Grandpa Jim. Johnny, I want you to lead us off here. So tell us, what should the Department of Education actually be doing? Because we've talked about states versus federal. What is the right role?
Yeah, Jacob, this is a great question. And it's, you know, if I go directly at it, you know, I might have a shocking response because I am a huge fan of state education being a state right. Right. And so then one might ask, well, then why do we even need the Department of Ed at the federal level? And I want to back out because in the moment we're in, we've created a scenario where it's necessary to have the Department of Ed, but it's, I'd be open to a conversation where we explored what would it be like if we didn't need to have a Department of the federal government overseeing public education. And so I'll say, I think we'd land on that. We need it, but what do we need it for? Right. And so I'll get at that. I think it's been incredible to have state rights also have some uniformity. And what is a key component and responsibility of the Department of Education that I would advocate for it to continue in its capacity and its need for is to enforce civil rights laws. If we're a country that stands for human rights and states have some jurisdiction over how they can do schools differently, we want to have a bottom line from state to state, right? And so I would think of that common good or that decency for all children in this country would be, regulated and enforced through the Civil Rights Office in the Department of Education. And that's certainly been kind of the idea that stood behind it. Again, just in a sense of ensuring a bottom line across all states would be really important to me because, we might move from state to state. Or as we know, we might have, operations of work that go beyond state boundaries. We're unique as a country. We're not several countries within a continent. We are one country with several states. And so something that brings together all of that state legislative level decision-making for education and says, hey, as long as you're all following our minimum requirements, we're good with you. Now, at the federal level, that would mean what are those minimum requirements look like, right? And so I think that's the messy part. And I've come to really appreciate, and I always advocate for more, but to appreciate that at a federal level, civil rights, things for like students with disabilities or, families who might be part of a minority group are represented at the state level and the federal level in terms of their children mattering in our country and in our community. So I've always kind of appreciated that federal level of things. So I think the big conversation, Jacob, is a good one. I like what our listener and amazing. We got to get this caller in for, more tire pumping as we move forward. But I like that question because it's a good one. Education is a state right. And as a champion of democracy, I really do like that decisions are made by those directly impacted by the decision being made. So state to state, that's where the power from my perspective should be in the locals. But then what unifies the locals? Right. And someone has to take care of it at the federal level. So that's in my thoughts and dreams and expectations of the Department of Education at the federal level is that their primary responsibility is, doing that unifying work. Have they been? No. By and large, they've become like an agency for administering federal aid, which I can get into in a separate, show or prompt. About kind of how we went wrong with that in the early 80s and turned that into a little bit of a business that's now blown up on us. But by and large, I like them in existence and their primary responsibility being unifying a commonality across states with lots of power to make decisions on how they do education in their states. Not as a Daddy Warbucks. And that's certainly what Tim and I have seen in our lifetime is a Department of Education that said, hey, we can't tell you what to do, but we're only going to give you money if you do what we say, right? And we've all been in that scenario. And we say, if you're living under my roof, and you're eating food in my house, you follow my rules. But I'm 18. You're still under my roof, and you're still eating my food. So if you want that housing and that food, well, then you're going to follow my rules. So I advocate not in that Daddy Warbucks role, but more in a truly unifying way to say, hey, we have a responsibility to have some commonality. States, you have the power. You make the decisions. But we gotta agree on a common good for education in this country. Because, hey, if we could say it more, I can't say it more eloquently than this. Our public education is the bedrock of our democracy. So the federal level, there's got to be some people whose job it is to make sure states aren't dropping the ball on that.
Well, Johnny, what would you say to somebody who hears what you just said and they say, well, talking about this civil rights aspect, why don't we just have a Department of Civil Rights Enforcement? Or why don't we just give this over to the Department of Justice? Do we need a Department of Education to handle that? I mean, what would you say to somebody who said that?
Yeah, I would say, Jacob, that's not a bad way to explore it. Certainly, let's look at all options. As long as there are qualified, responsible people in a primary position where they can put education first, my gut reaction would be, I think our justice system is a little bit probably preoccupied with more institutions than just our schools. And I kind of like, and I'm going to romanticize a bit here, I kind of like separating them because I'd like to think about education as an entity separate from our criminal justice system, but connected. And what I mean by connected is that there are laws that help ensure safety and help ensure well-being for all students, teachers, and people in our community. But this office focuses on what's best for learning, what's best for students, what's best for their growth, their achievement, their well-being, their health. So I think by and large, those departments should speak to each other and certainly have some crossover. But I would worry if we just fold it into the larger, like most things, it will fall down on the far down on the priority list. And I'm not complaining about that because I think there are lots of things that, like, say, our criminal justice or our legal system has to balance and focus on. This takes that off their plates and allows for there to be educational specialists in those positions, both in the legal representation and also in the learning sciences.
That's a very interesting point of view, Johnny. Now I'm going to turn to an expert, Dr. Tim Slecker. Same question to you. What would you say to our questioner here who goes by Jacob's Grandpa Jim? Love you too, Grandpa Jim. What do you think the Department of Education should ideally look like?
Well, I don't know if this is going to be different, but I've been thinking a lot about this, and I might actually be in favor of Linda McMahon fully executing, you know, a true suplex on the Department of Education as it has now come to be, if we really then move this into truly a, as best as we could, insulate it and kind of as we're looking at to, again, more of our international friends that try their best to take that realm, education, and push it off, isolating it from the politics of the day, and that they then become that organization, that institution that really does then say what's best and can really drive education policy. And I'll point this out too. What are some of the reasons that we did have the federal oversight? Johnny did a really great, explanation of that. I just want to remind people though, too, that, you know, one of the problems of states' rights and the state's authority is at a time, and in fact, we have even now seen this lately, that okay, when it comes to making curriculum decisions, the idea that says, you know, and Johnny and I have been on the show now for years advocating that, you know, the curricular decisions should best be located closer and closer to the students and the teachers that are going to be doing that type of work. But I also recognize that too, that in a climate of where, we start to recognize and go, well, I don't want my kids to learn about slavery. And in fact, slavery makes my kids feel uncomfortable. And you know what? We're going to turn this more into, you know, a discussion of the economics and, you know, the good old days and things like that. And, you know, you start to worry like, well, then politically who's in power has the ability then to potentially implement content and curriculum that actually becomes incredibly problematic from the standpoint of advocating things that just aren't true. And in fact, mandating the inclusion of content that is, you know, undemocratic, in fact, is very much in the direction of being, you know, even all of this, we see this today, all of this anti-DEI stuff in the name of because DEI is racist. No, actually, advocating what they're advocating for is the ability to instill curriculum that, I'm sorry, is racist. When you say that, you know, certain things in the past that happened make my kids uncomfortable, we're not going to talk about that. So all of that is to come back and say, look, there are things, so when it comes to education, politics should not have the ability to dictate curriculum in that sense. We're talking about science. One of our great guests that we've had on the show many times, Dr. Ethan Siegel, astrophysicist, talks about the scientific consensus. We see this now too. We're not allowed to teach climate change and things like that. Well, wait. There's who said? Because climate, the reality of what's happening there, that's not a political decision as to whether or not you should learn about something that's actually happening and true. So I kind of start to really think about more of, and I'm going to say this word, and I know it might potentially, but more of a ministry of education that is a separate group of people who are educators, who have understood, who are scientists, who really have that sense of saying, our job is to make education in this country the best. And let's take that Department of Education and move it out of the hands of the political powers, because we know what happens with political powers is they change, they move on, they get onto a fad. And the reality is we're seeing that now too, is to say, and just because someone's in power now, they've stacked the deck, created an education department that, you know, truly is, its job is to get rid of itself, and but is also then also enforcing, taking that federal authority that it does have and mandating science that isn't science, junk science, mandating curriculum that isn't truthful, mandating and instilling. And the other part is driving the profession of teachers down to the point where they are leaving the profession. They don't want to be teachers. None of this is good for an education system for a country that is meant to be thriving. So I go back to Finland, talk about Australia, talk about, you know, particularly those Scandinavian countries, not Australia, but the other Scandinavian countries, how do they have national policy around education? And they have that much more in a sense of being isolated away from the politics and keeping education as their focus. And people are saying, Tim, that's not reality. I know. And sometimes I don't like to play in reality because, you know, sometimes your reality is painful. And why not imagine another reality? And so I would like to say, okay, Linda McMahon, suplex it and then break it and then give it back to the educators, the parents, the principals, the people who create curriculum, the people. Take it away. I would love for you to break it all to pieces so that nobody currently, Democrat or Republican, has their little bit of fingers in there making a mess. Because as much as it's being made of a mess now and kind of breaking it apart, whatever the Trump administration and Linda McMahon is doing, understand, I was down at the Department of Education in 2010, 11, and 12 protesting that Department of Education, which was a Democratic Department of Education, Barack Obama, Arne Duncan. And what were we down there again saying? You are taking advantage of being in power politically and doing things to kids, schools, and community that doesn't have any justification in any type of research, as it's going to result in better schools, better living conditions, better learning conditions. The politics of that day in those times was ruining a good quality education that a democracy depends on. So I'm going to answer that question with going, you know what? Yeah, I'll get rid of it. If we get rid of the political part of it and take it out of the hands of the political class and put it back in the hands of professionals, experts, researchers who are having the ability to make decisions that are what's for the best, not what's best to be reelected. That's my answer.
I like that answer, Tim. My first question would be, when you create your new Politburo for the Department of Education, how do you get into your new Ministry of Education? Who puts these people into the Ministry of Education to make the decisions? Who brings in the union members? Who brings in the teachers, the theorists? How do you get onto this board that makes these decisions?
That simple. You'd put me in charge. And that would, you know, then I make all the decisions right there. Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. You know, how do you get into those positions? And you know, the reality here is that there's obviously some form of political appointment. In fact, we should have that as representative. You know, in fact, you know, not so long ago, a lot of state departments of education and or regions and things like that had membership that was set by, okay, it was set by the politicians, but was set by a representative government by the people, and membership was designated as, you know, the governor gets 4 picks. You know, the people get 3 picks, the teachers get 2. The idea was that membership was a balanced group of people so that there was this representation always there, so that we're really staying true to democracy, but that it was immune from who was in political power to tilt the balance of that organization, that institution. So, you know, and I think that's a great thing. And we see that as being, you know, why would we mandate how the membership is because we realize that power is corrupting. And when somebody's in power, they're going to take advantage of that. And so you said early on, here are the ground rules. Here's what membership looks like. And yes, the winner of the election, you have the ability to appoint members, but you don't get the ability to appoint a majority of members, and you surely don't get the ability to decommission the process for how those people are chosen, which actually we do see happening now at state level departments of education, where the ruling political class is doing away with those, what we'd say, membership or how you're included lists that say so many from here, so many from there, doing away with that type of and saying, I'm now in charge, I have full power. And so in the governor's office in the state of Ohio over the last 10 years, the ability to be included in those types of institutions is now largely all in the governor's hands. And that is not a good thing for education. It's a good thing for the government, for those who are in power, because they get to put their people in charge. That doesn't result. So, I mean, does it make it harder? Does it make it messier? Absolutely. Hey, but that's what democracy looks like.
I really like that idea there at the end of breaking up the monopoly on who puts people in charge of education and dispersing the responsibility for bringing people in to multiple stakeholders. I think that's a really good way to kind of get away from some of the partisanship and some of the mm-hmm. hyper-partisanship we've got going on, especially in something which I think a lot of people would agree. There can be some more, a little bit more technocratic side to education mm-hmm. because it's a little bit more straightforward in some aspects that, you know, there's not so many opinions. Of course, we've all got opinions, but there mm-hmm. are some things that we can kind of work on, like Johnny was saying, to have that set of standards. Now, you know, the locals, can have their methods and have things going, but there should be a federal standard. I like that. Tim, would you agree with Johnny when he said that in general, he likes that it is a state right over education, barring those extra standards?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't disagree with Johnny.
We can do the whole next show on you guys fighting about states' rights.
No,
we'll call it the Civil War show.
I don't disagree. But when I say this, it's like, okay, at least the state's in charge. When you have a bad federal political leadership, that you can go, you know. So the current state I'm in right now, you know, I think education's in better shape because of who's politically in power. But that can change pretty quickly in a state. And so the state I just left, Ohio, which, again, guess what? It is states' rights and it is local. And currently the power over the last 10 years in the state of Ohio hasn't been good for public education. So that's my kind of caveat on that one. Johnny, I see.
I guess I'll do a quick clap back and then I'll take up Jacob's suggestion that we do a special show, like a LARPing, a live action role play of the Federalist Papers. And I'll take Jefferson. Tim, you take Monroe since you're such a central government guy. Again, I'm pinning that on Tim. But no, you know, I would say to me, I'm always going to advocate for localizing the decision-making and shifting the power from a central location to a more decentralized locale, a Jeffersonian democracy, if we can, you know, get to that kind of essence of things. And Tim, my answer to that is what happens is people move, they leave states, they organize and change states. And so, you know, if it's not going well in a state, well, then it's the responsibility of the citizens of that state to say, hey, this is not going well. And then I'll come back around to, and that's why I'm an advocate for a federal Department of Education, because I do think there is some national level of responsibility to say, hey, just because Ohio is deciding, and Ohioans, I'm not picking on you, just an example. I've been there. Michigan's been there, right? Washington's probably going to be there sometime in my lifetime. It happens, right? But the federal government then says, hey, come on, you're falling below what we would say is healthy for our nation. And so you can make changes, but there are some things you can't change and there are some things you can't go below on. So I'll always advocate on the side of power, decentralize it. Decision-making, decentralize it. And to me, there's nothing more decentralized and local than our public schools.
I think overall that's the great American lesson is that it's good to have a balance between these things. You know, you should have strong states and you should also have a strong federal government. They interact and somewhere in the middle, we find ourselves with an acceptable policy. Tim, Johnny, I want to thank you again for coming on this show. It's great to have you as always. I mean, two of the best guests that anybody's ever had come on their own shows. Guys, now it's time.
Let's go
for the 60-second segment. You thought I was going to say moment is in, didn't you? No way. Haven't done it yet. All right. We're going to start off with Dr. Tim Slecker. Tim, you're the new Secretary of Education. Can you tell me day one, what's your first act as a Secretary of Education?
First act is to do away with and dismantle all legislation and requirements mandating the teaching of and only the, quote, science of reading. Doing away with that and realizing if we're going to talk about balance and going back to and realizing that a balanced literacy program is absolutely the best for kids. And that isn't me advocating for a curriculum by a certain scholar. I'm using the word balance to truly mean, which is some kids learn to read best with phonics. Some kids learn to read best by actually having the ability to look at books. And some kids learn to read by doing all of those things. And the reality is that teachers should be equipped and empowered to use the approaches to teach reading to kids that work. That's what I would do.
You've been impeached. Good news, Johnny. You're the new Secretary of Education. Your predecessor, Tim, had some good ideas, but what can you do? What are you going to do on your first day as Secretary of Education?
Well, Jacob, the very first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to reach out to AFT President Randy Weingarten, and I'm going to say, let's sit down and let's center health in our communities, teachers and the healthcare workers in our communities, and figure out how to strengthen this country through schools. And it starts with making sure children have everything they need in our schools and classrooms. On that same day, I think we're going to have a great conversation about how we listen to educators, the seasoned veterans who are going to say things like Tim said, hey, science of reading isn't working for us. Hey, too much emphasis on these test scores. We're going to listen, and I'm going to put a capital L-I-S-T-E-N. We're going to listen to the educators about what's best for kids. The next thing we're going to do in that same day, that same exact day, is we're going to put an all call out to every community college in this country and say, we are no longer K-12. We are pre-K through adult, and let's get together and figure out how to be the hub that strengthens this democracy on the ground in our communities, state by state by state, with teachers in the forefront of that. That's my first day, Jacob.
I think the first word that kids should learn to read, Tim, is diarchy, because we need both of you in as our secretaries of education or our commissars in your new Ministry of Education. But now for our moment of zen.
They have the guns. We have the poets. Therefore, we will win.
We hope you had a great week. This is one of the best ways to close it off. So thanks for listening to this episode of Busted Pencils, Jacob's producer's choice. Remember to grab great podcasts packed full with more Busted Pencils content on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course on the Civic Media website or at bustedpencils.com, where you can follow, like, review, do whatever it is you do with your social medias. But hey, don't be late for homeroom on Monday. And be sure that you grab next week's class in session on Wednesday. And if you don't already know, well, then you're going to love this. You can always catch Busted Pencils broadcast at 3 p.m. Central Time every Saturday across all the Civic Media Network stations. For that's right, 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny. And keep busting pencils.